This is a session on JNLC, or Justice Network in the Lutheran Church. Pete Perro, who has been also very deeply involved in the foundation and carrying out of the workings of JNLC over the years, is also going to help me out with talking about this tonight. I should ask a couple of questions to start. Are there people here who've known about or have been involved at all over the last 6 years with JNLC? By at all? Just a couple people? No? Okay. It's going through a couple of changes of identification and what JNLC stands for. So we'll catch you up on that. As it is currently, and as we'll spend most of our time in this session talking about, it's a network of justice agenda organizations, movements, independent organizations within the Lutheran churches, and it's only in its present form 7 months old. And so we'll go back over some of the history of it first. It might be good just to find out, though, if not many of you have understandably been related at all to JNLC so far, it would be fun to find out how many independent movements or justice agenda organizations we could name that you have some connection or at least knowledge about. So we know the kind of animal we're talking about when we're talking about a network of them.
Is Amnesty International?
That is obviously a kind of a grassroots movement organization. But I want to stick to Lutheran. Lutheran, since this is mostly, although it does a whole lot of ecumenical connections. National Namibia Concerns. This is a. Most of you have how many of you have some connections with National Namibia Concerns? Heard about them, received some of their information? Denver, Colorado based?
Right.
Okay, that's one. Justice agenda, grassroots movement, independent organization, Lutheran or ecumenical that Lutherans involved with?
Lutheran Peace Fellowship.
Pardon? Lutheran Peace Fellowship, one of the oldest. Matter of fact, I think it may very well be the oldest of this kind of breed of organization, early 1940s.
Need another pin.
Lutheran Church. Pardon?
Need another pin.
Yeah. Are there other ones that work better?
Yeah.
World Council of Churches.
Pardon?
World Council of Churches.
That's obviously a very important act. Started off as a grassroots movement and independent organization, but that's a national, worldwide. Within the Lutheran Church, grassroots.
Witness for Peace?
Well, there's Lutheran involvement with Witness for Peace, certainly.
Peace links.
All the peace groups, but that's, there are, actually, Lutheran Peace Fellowship belongs to Fellowship of Reconciliation, mm-hmm. which is an ecumenical group, and they directly relate to Witness for Peace.
Lutheran Human Relations.
Lutheran Human Relations. The second oldest that I know along with Lutheran Peace Fellowship, started in the late 1940s, primary concern with racism, and since then with sexism in the Lutheran Church and other issues. Those two, there are just that are connected with this justice network in the Lutheran Church. There are 30 organizations. So there's
Lutheran Concern.
Pardon?
What about
Lutheran Concern? Right. If you've heard of Lutheran's Concern before, raise your hand. Lutheran Concern for gay and lesbian rights, is it? Gay and lesbian? Okay.
Somebody else? Lutheran Social Services.
Lutheran Social Services is an institutional. Let me make a little distinction here between the institutionally based justice organizations of which all the LSSs are, and the grassroots, every one of the ones you see up here so far does not exist because the institution of the Lutheran Church decided it should exist.
I'm trying to figure those kinds of questions out of nuance.
No, no, that's good. No, no. That's really good. It's a way for us to make distinctions between this. We've so far we're only in its present form 7 months old, and we've already received 4 letters from institutional groups saying we want to join JNLC, and we're trying to decide what to do with it. Because make some distinctions between what your synod or your national office decides we need this organization and something that comes up from the grassroots because of concern for some particular issue, like Namibia issues, like peace fellowship and pacifism, like the human relations and Lutheran concern for gay. You know that none of our Lutheran national bodies are going to start an organization for support of gay and lesbian issues. Now, they have to come from the grassroots up, and is one of the major forces that's helping the Lutheran Church to come to new positions on.
Is the Lutheran Women's Caucus of...
Lutheran Women's Caucus. It's another one. Now, you know that within the institution of the church, there is the women of the ELCA and women of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod, and so forth, but a grassroots organization carrying some issues that don't come out of the institution and need to come from the grassroots comes out of the Lutheran Women's Caucus.
What's the one on sanctuary? I can't think of the name of it.
Pardon?
What's the one for sanctuary? I can't think of the name. There are several, I think.
Well, within the Lutheran grassroots movement is the Lutheran Coalition on Latin America, LUCOLA. I'm not sure if that's the one you're thinking of. Lutheran Coalition on Latin America. The national coordinator of that happens to be here. Pastor Susan Berkelo is the national coordinator of the Lutheran Coalition on Latin America.
Mm-hmm. What about Lutheran border concerns? I don't know if that falls in that. There is a group in our area called Lutheran Border Concerns.
I have no idea, Susan. Are they a grassroots group or are they coming out of the institution?
I don't know what they are.
As sort of a combination, there are a lot of people who are working on the border in both in agencies and in parishes. Mm-hmm. And they've recently had a couple of conferences and things too.
That's a good idea. That's a good way. We need to find out about where they are. If you name the issue of social concern, you could probably find somewhere in the Lutheran Church, as well as all the other denominations, some grassroots group who's raising it from out of the grassroots, even while there are also some people within the institution on official committees that are working on it. They're not necessarily in competition with each other. They come out of two different kinds of base and maybe carry a different intensity or a different part of the issue. In some of these things, when Lutheran human relations came into existence, the Lutheran churches were back in the early 40s running away from racial issues. Now they only walk slowly away from the racial issues. But Lutheran Human Relations was a grassroots group that started the kind of movement that made it later necessary and possible for official institutional response to take place. As we'll say in a few moments, I really have a personal conviction, and a lot of other people do also, that as in almost every area of public human life, there are these two elements that are sort of the yin and the yang of public response. If you look at politics, the grassroots movements and the elected officials, sometimes they're clashing with each other, sometimes they're working together with each other, but together they provide the kind of ways in which people respond and fill the entire circle of the response.
I don't know if you mentioned, I wasn't here at the very beginning, but a lot of Lutherans involved in justice work are involved ecumenically in other groups. For instance, when you mentioned sanctuary, there's a number of sanctuary groups that Lutherans, in fact, in the session yesterday, one woman said, I asked what parish she was from, she said, no, it's not my congregation that's involved in sanctuary, it's as a Catholic congregation that I'm involved in that's in sanctuary. So like Witness for Peace is ecumenical, and a lot of Lutherans have not found within the church places to take these concerns or other people to share them with. And so there are some groups that are doing this now, but obviously there's possibility for more.
Isn't Holden Village a member?
Holden Village is in the process of officially solidifying its membership in the Justice Network of the Lutheran Church. You are the presence of your guests or staff, whichever you are, in a place that is in itself a grassroots or independent organization at which justice concerns are at its center. So Holden Village is in itself one. Many of you on a congregational level or on a synodical level are also have the same kind of relationships. Well, let me come back to a more complete list of organizations in a few moments that would be representative of JNLC. But at the present time, there are 30 justice-concerned movements or organizations that are part of this network. There are probably 300 independent justice concern organizations. So the Justice Network is only a beginning of looking at them. Many of them on local or regional levels, rather than national levels. I think that perhaps to take us back to close to the beginning of what became for us a new way of looking at justice concerns in the Lutheran Church is something that you've probably heard Pete talk about, and I'm going to have him just talk about it again in just a very brief summary of that, of something called the Transcultural Seminar that took place in the late 70s and early part of the 80s. Whether we're thinking about race relations or racial justice or dealing with racism, or any of the other many issues of peace, of sexual concerns, gender, the gay lesbian concerns, or the many, many city urban issues, whatever the justice issues you can think about, or specific issues, it's been the concern of many of us, and perhaps for most of you, the desire, the wish that the institutions of our church placed justice more closely to the center of what it means to be part of the Christian faith. For on a congregational level, it's been my frustration and perhaps many of yours that the social ministry committee sort of was a tail on a dog, and that the meshing of the center of the concern of the church was not that the justice concerns were at the center. You could say the same thing on your synodical expressions of the church or in the national levels. Many of the times that an issue comes into being and expressed out of the grassroots has to do specifically because it didn't have to have the kind of energy or commitment or priority within the institution that somebody wanted it to be. And so they ended up saying, okay, let's start an organization and let's get it going from here, and then we'll push from the bottom. One of the issues in which that's been more true than any other has been the Lutheran Church and its race relations, dealing with racism, racial justice, and racial concerns, and the multicultural issues that are now present with us more than they have ever been. And that's because a few folk got together and pushed those issues back in the 60s and 70s in a new kind of way. And one of those was became the parent of JNLC. Why don't you say a little bit about that, Pete?
Yeah, I always say this in different ways, primarily because a number of components make up the central thrust of how things have come out today. To give you an illustration of that, when I grew up, it seemed to be one issue, white folks versus black folks. You may have had experience that there were other issues going down, but that's all I saw. but of course, since that time, one way of putting this is that demonic has fractured itself into so many thrusts
of oppressive exploiting and hurting people, that you can't work on one issue and have just your issue and that's, and you through with it. Because the demonic doesn't work that way. If you work on just the hands and let the rest of the body go, then the hands are alive and the whole body is dead. So people must learn how to come together, or their fragmentation will inevitably be the death of everybody, properly understood. So it's insufficient to just work on racism, since most of us are sophisticated enough politically to know that you're dealing with sexism, classism, and racism, and those the big threes, even in the scriptures. male and female, Jew, Gentile, and so forth and so on. When you critically analyze that, you begin to see, well, I'll be doggone if we're not dealing with sexism, racism, classism right there in the scriptures, and we just never realized it before. So that's one angle. In other words, I'm describing the maladies, or what were the diseases which sprung forth to cause us to be in a network as we are today. The other point that may be of interest to you is that in the United States, I don't think it was necessarily some accident that we now have multinational corporations. You think that was an accident? No, that thing was looked at, analyzed, and well planned. Well, since we're dealing in a multinational context today, it is woefully insufficient for somebody to talk about just their suburbs or just their community. That's a high level of stupidity. Either we move toward a multinational organization type thing, or we are doomed. Black folk will tell the rest of the communities about this, and we have, but we're in the process of doing it. We're setting up international hookups right now in the black world with Africa. So hopefully the rest of the people will follow along us, because we can no longer just work on just the black community in some city or in some country, et cetera, and so forth and so on. So some of us are way out there, sprung way out. So in relationship to that, if you're gonna deal with a multinational corporation, then ecclesiastical structures like Lutheranism will say to itself, we must merge. That too wasn't an accident. See, so when you're sitting up thinking and working with people who design and move the world literally, then you begin to understand their thinking. That's where some of us are. So it is by no accident that Lutherans are merging. And properly understood, they're not merging for theology. They're merging on the basis of economic political power. And of course, they have to think like that. You know, that's their thing. But in the meantime, the grassroots cannot afford not to do quote unquote likewise. And that's what some of these networks are flashing in front of you. You see? You know, the more we stay fractured and say, well, I'm just dealing with the gay lesbian movement, I don't care about anybody else, you're gonna be in big trouble. Or I'm just dealing with the feminist movement, we don't care about anybody else, you've got to be kidding. See what I'm saying? I always say to people with their little issue, how will it look if whatever you're doing is successful? Now, that's a fascinating thing, that we ought to do that someday. We ought to come to Holy Village and sit down and draw out, literally draw pictures of how things will look if you were in control of it and if you were successful. I am afraid that most of the rest of the people would still be suffering and dying. See? So if you get the picture, that's woefully insufficient. So on the basis of that then, we were pushing all grassroots organizations, and this is the kind of lingo we were talking then, we think your organization ought to die so that we can give birth to something that is bigger and a little bit more powerful to be able to deal with the demonic. So we had the different groups come together so that they could put major effort and energy into what one of them were doing. See, if everybody did and jumped on one person's issue, then you got more credibility and quote unquote power to begin to deal with that issue. So in effect, that's kind of like the rationale of what's happening today in our land. And obviously what we're hoping will happen even in a situation like this. Now, one last point of the rationale here for this kind of thing. When organizations, no, I'll put it another way. An old white preacher told me once, he said, Pete, he said, the larger a church or a church body becomes, the more it degenerates into tinkers and politicians. I've never forgotten that. And I was on internship at the time, because it struck me as being so unusual. Because I had been programmed to make things big, and you know, if I make them big, he says, well, they're going to degenerate into tinkers and politicians. And the average church that's been a little church a long time, when the Lord blesses it, the people start bitching, ocking, and crocking, crying and sighing, moaning and groaning over the fact that people don't speak to us hardly anymore. I mean, it's not like it used to be. You all know that. If you're in a big church now, it's as cold as ice. They don't even know you're there. But the point that I'm trying to get to is that when the church becomes big like that, there is a significant amount of what we know symbolically as red tape, right? You know, somebody will go to them with a problem and say, well, okay, well, and they're very nice and most of all Christian with you. We will take a good look at this. We will take it to the committee, and that committee will take it to another committee, and so forth and so on. And by the time you get through filling out papers, writing up biographical sketches and all the rest of this stuff, and then, of course, you know, the committee ought to meet once a year. So, and, you know, you're supposed to come back next year to deal with whatever. But I mean this sincerely, and God bless the institution. But if you're going to take care of some serious exploitative need or oppressive need, then you really don't have time to be fooling around like that. Ergo, organizations spring up. I think that is a natural phenomenon of human life. People come together and they go on and do what they got to do, and by the time the institution gets it, the folks didn't resolve whatever is going down. See? So, you know, lest you be dismayed about this and saying, well, we have an institution to take care of social ministry and stuff. Yeah, you do, but by the time they get down here, you know, all these people will be dead from whatever problem they have. So organizations are going to always spring up like that. And our attempt is to only put those organizations together so that you can press the church to move with urgency, you know, with whatever issues, of course, that come up.
Is that a question?
Yeah.
Or is it you stretching?
Right. But isn't there a presupposition that everybody is on board with everybody else's issue?
Yes.
So in other words, everybody that's involved in this coalition,
yeah,
has to be converted to,
yes,
everybody's issue.
Can I use this one?
Sure.
Well, and we drew a diagram for our original gang when we were putting this stuff together and said, there is a boardroom, and in that board you have some white males, you know, sitting around the table. These are just symbols, because you know ain't no black folk there. And you know the women in there. There ain't a couple of them in there now. But you got those white males, and then out in the corridor, there are piles of people. Thousands and thousands of people. And these people are oppressing this little group over here because they're gay. They're oppressing this group over here because of their skin color. Oppressing this group over here because of their sex. Oppressing this group over here because of whatever, et cetera. So there's only one group of folk doing that. I tell people all the time, we ain't got no 2,000 liberation movements, and there's only one. See what I'm saying? And the issue is, what y'all gonna do about these few little folk in there oppressing and hurting the rest of these people? So I said, what y'all gonna do about that? Most of the people say, we will cooperate with the board in our demise. And that is precisely what human beings do. And I'm willing to discuss that with anybody, anytime. Here, bishops, anybody else. But if you can stop people from cooperating with their own enslaved, like the most powerful word in the symbol of human life is no, we ain't gonna do that. See what I'm saying? You ain't got no problem, they do. Because they must have your cooperation if you stay in the position that you're in, et cetera, and so forth. So that's what we did. We're trying to convince people through social analysis what's really happening to them, to them, and who's doing it. Now somebody says, what tradition is that? I said, Luther. Because Luther did not say we must fight against powers and principalities. You don't know what that is and who that is. Luther said, I'm telling y'all that the Antichrist is not some demonic entity out there. It is the Pope. Now that's clear, isn't it? So that's a part of this tradition.
Part of the fruit of the work too that happened over the last few years is that those issues have been owned more by other groups. And we've had conversations, for instance, with Lutherans Concerned, some of the people more closely involved in the cooperative work said, hey, I'm really aware that we need to deal with racism among ourselves. And other groups that never really touched the gay lesbian issue at all said, well, maybe this isn't such a foreign issue to us. It sounds awfully familiar, and maybe we can to some extent also, each recognizing that it's really good to have somebody focusing on that and doing a lot of work in it for all of us, but also that in some ways we can cooperate without each of us doing, 100% everybody else's work too.
I understand the need for a big, powerful organization, but how does one congregation support 30 concerns and keep track of that and effectively, try to do some good in any one area?
Well, it's only really one concern out there. You see, whether I kill you because you're gay, because you're male, because you're black, because you're whatever, you still dead, right? I mean, what difference does it make, for what rationale I deal with you? See, that's keeping people in ignorance. And you remind people that they're being hurt. Let's forget why. Let's just find out who's doing it. See what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Et cetera and so forth. So that hopefully then that
puts. But you also see that there are practical concerns. There are different solutions to different problems. And
no, it's the same solution.
And
it says, no, I will not cooperate.
Okay.
See what I'm saying?
Yes. There's also, and we'll come to this in a few moments, because I don't think we want to be giving the image that we're taking the place of whatever the congregation officially relates to, mm-hmm. and is dealing with concerns through the institution of the church. But something of a supplemented kind of a thing that models that in the yin and yang kind of way that I spoke of a few moments ago. One of the experience that we had over the first 3 years of JNLC's existence, under another name even, as I'll say in a moment, was one of the most wonderful laboratories for us about what this, all that Pete's speaking of, could accomplish, is when it was came to be known by all of us collectively in the early 80s that there was to be the developing of a new Lutheran church and the appointing of 70 people in something called CNLC, the Commission for New Lutheran Church. There were a few people who had enough sense in the grassroots to say we have to do something about the gathering of these forces to respond. And now if you can just picture that circle that Pete drew with the X's is the commission for the New Lutheran Church for a moment. The first thing that happened was that in the building of that organization, that commission of 70 people for the New Lutheran Church, is that these people began to ask the question, who is going to be on that commission and to what degree will they represent, particularly the justice issues that we were concerned about?
Right.
And there was a kind of a campaign because of many people, not just totally these people against those people, a lot of people who were putting together from the institution that commission, and a lot of people from the grassroots were, had the similar concern. Would this group be inclusive? Would this 70 people be representative of all of the concerns that we have? Or would they be, as the kind of symbols that Pete was using, white clergy men with the age and experience that makes them offer something, but certainly nothing complete about what is needed? And the campaign that took place with a lot of the grassroots organizations helping through the United States made it necessary and possible that the original formation of the Commission for the New Lutheran Church would be fully inclusive and diverse before it was ever formed. And the Commission for the New Lutheran Church scared an awful lot of people when they had to do this, was formed with a formula of 60% laity, 50% men, 50% women, 15% people of color. There were some other formulas, but I've forgotten what they were right now, but to be inclusive and diverse.
They were ALC, LC.
And then all of the ALC, LC, and all the other kind of things. And age, full
parish ministry,
representation of all of them. To the third meeting of the CNLC, they almost disbanded. Because of the frustration. The first thing that happened is that the third to a half of that group that was the old veterans of the church, primarily white male clergy, said to the rest of them, in effect, aren't we glad that we have you all along to help? And aren't you glad that we have the experience that we can tell you what to do?
And the thing almost blew up.
And for the first two meetings, everybody believed that line. Until all of a sudden, until the beginning of the formation of the other group began to say, wait, that's not quite the way we'd like it to be. And it became very, very frustrating through meeting 3, 4, and 5 as they began to learn to work together. And they hit the valley of the shadow in which they actually entertained a motion. They didn't have to vote on it, fortunately. Actually entertained a motion in their third or fourth meeting when we're meeting in Minneapolis to disband and to go back to the people who created them and say, we cannot work by this formula. And that was the bottoming out, and then they began the slow, difficult, but creative and beautiful, spirit-inspired climb into learning to be an inclusive, diverse, multicultural group that could learn and work together. And if I had the time, and I wish somebody would do a survey of those 70 people, I've spoken to a lot of them, and I'll bet you that 60 or 65 out of the 70 would say it was one of the most wonderful experiences that changed them and will never let them be the same. Yeah. Now, during another thing that happened during that time, as they came into being, as just before they came into being, when we were beginning to do this grassroots movement to get that inclusiveness on that group, there was a couple of people, one by the name of Reverend Dr. Al Perel, and his experience with a transcultural seminar. Another one, Pastor Jim Mayer from Partners in Mission of the AELC. His wife is going to be arriving tomorrow and will be on faculty here. He has since died of cancer, gave the last couple of years, and especially the last few months of his life, creating this helping to create this organization. Called together, and as Pete has said, all these people acting independently and letting themselves be killed individually as organizations, called those groups together, and I need to confess, when I was one of them who said, no, I don't want to spend my time, I don't want to waste my time doing this, helping to rearrange deck chairs on a Titanic. Let them go form a new church. I got more important things to do. And Pete and Jim and a few others and Jody and others sat me and others down and said, let's talk about what is important. And then called a meeting conference held in Techne, Illinois, sometime in March of 1983, I think it was. Jim Mayer formulated the
theological basis and the invitations to that conference, picked out the persons whom it would be sent to, put it on his computer, sent the letters out, and that night called his family together with his doctors saying he's already lived a month longer than he should ever live, sent them out of his house, and then that night called his family together. They had a communion service together, and he died in the middle of the night. And it was just one of the, for those of us who were part of that process, one of the most sacred and holy experiences of our lives. And that which was then called the Working Group on Justice Agendas and the New Lutheran Church, I'll just put NLC, and the New Lutheran Church came into being and operated not as a network, but for 3 years operated as a coalition. I want to make a distinction about that. If you take 20 organizations and they put all of their, not all of their effort, but all of them put some of their time, money, and efforts into a single coalition with a single goal, how can we help the New Lutheran Church have justice more at its center? It wasn't a triumphalistic thing of saying, how can we make justice at the center of the New Lutheran Church, but how can we help to influence that process so that justice issues will be more at the center? And since the Commission for New Lutheran Church was called CNLC, we called ourselves JNLC, so that we would match them in a kind of in the way we were spelled out. It was called Working Group on Justice Agendas in the New Lutheran Church. We had developed with the help of a lot of people in our organization and coalition, such as Mary Nelson and Pete and Joe and so many other people, developed a working relationship with CNLC, especially with the 30 people who were our friends, who were the people who came on represented from a new perspective, in a kind of a chaplaincy relationship, and so that we ended up having a marvelous working relationship. The CNLC working to build a new church, and then and our helping to campaign from the grassroots, the new church came out with three pillars that I want to mention, and then I'll go on to the new JNLC, that make the three things that from the perspective of many of us makes the new ELCA different than any of the older bodies, and makes it possible for us to be collectively building something we've never built before in a church. Closer, bringing justice closer to the center. These structures make it possible. They don't do the job. They make it possible for us to build something new. One is the Commission on Multicultural Ministry. We have here at Holden, we had some others earlier, but still have now on the teaching faculty, Pastor Richard Perry back there, who is the Director of Black Ministries on the Commission of Multicultural Ministry, and Pastor Bill Wong, he's not here, I don't think, who is the Director of Asian Ministries and the Commission of Multicultural Ministry, making it possible for the first time in the history of any Lutheran church for there to be institutionalized structures of power for people of color in a church that have to do with specifically naming and carrying out the ministries that are important to those people, and to making them part of building, for all of us, a new church that is multicultural. Secondly, there is a Commission on Women. Likewise, even as powerful as the women's organizations in the church bodies are, the first time within the official structures of the church, a place for institutionalized structural power for naming what is ministry within the church for women. And then finally, within the constitution of the church, having rules for representation, and I'll put down a shorthand of that. A lot of people don't like this word, quotas, and it's not exactly quotas, but I don't want to write out rules for representation, in which all of the boards and staff on the national,
and regional and synodical levels of the church, there will be specifically fulfilled inclusiveness and diversity of women, of laity, of people of color, age, and etc. Constitutionalized, not just simply intentional. Oh, it's everybody should have good intentions and try and get a little bit here and a little bit there, but constitutionally determined rules for representation. Now these three, and I'm sure that there are others that others might name as equally as important, but these we believe are the three most important pillars for building within the structures of the church of something new for us in the ELCA. When we came to the end of the constituting convention of the ELCA and the 20 organizations that formed the Working Group on Justice Agendas and the New Lutheran Church came back together again to celebrate what we were able to do and to evaluate, reflect, people said we can't stop here. That we've done something new that we've never done before in having groups that are concerned about specific individual issues in the grassroots come together and cooperate, and we've done something we've never done before. We've got to continue something that would perpetuate and build on that. So we went from what was decided then and just came into being 7 months ago. We kept the same initials of JNLC, but called it by a different set of names, and that is Justice Network in the Lutheran Church. Specifically didn't say ELCA because we want to be able to also represent struggles for justice within the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. And even though Lutheran is there, we also want to be as ecumenical as possible. The important word here is network, is that where in the original coalition it was to get as much centralized power to accomplish a single goal cooperatively, the goal here is how do we help each other, strengthen each other's individual organization and issues while we're also cooperating to do centralized kinds of goals. And as I mentioned when we began and we started to list some of the groups that you knew about, when you put them up, there are presently, as we begin that network now, 30 justice-centered organizations, justice agenda movements and organizations that have started that network together. Let me name a few more that you didn't that we didn't have up in the original one. In the new ELCA, there are four associations: Black Association, Asian Association, Native American Association, and Hispanic Association in the grassroots. They are all four of those are members of JNLC. There is a new anti-racism association that is just being created of different groups that are working in the grassroots for racial justice. All these I'm starting with the racism and racial justice groups. There's an organization that I'm a part of in New York called Crossroads Ministry, and my wife Susan Berkelow, who was here a few moments ago. There are groups that are concerned with sexism and sexual justice: Lutheran Human Relations Association, Lutheran Women's Caucus, Lutheran's Concern for Gay and Lesbian Rights, and Wingspan. There are groups concerned with peace issues, such as Order of St. Martin and Lutheran Peace Fellowship. There are groups concerned with urban issues, such as a new national group called Committee on the City, of which Jody is one of the primary coordinators of it at this time, plus some more local regional groups: the Lutheran Metropolitan Ministry of Cleveland, Metropolitan Lutheran Ministry of Kansas City, Bethel New Life of Chicago. There are groups concerned with economic issues, such as the Appalachian Ministry for Economic Justice. There are groups concerned with global issues, such as Lutheran Coalition on Latin America, Center for Mission and Education, the Center for Global Concerns, National Libya Concerns, Contact and Resource Center for Lebanese Issues. And we have some fun groups. There's a brand new group that it's made up of
of musicians and artists. It started off by calling itself, what was its first
name?
LUMU. Lutheran Underground Musicians Union. And then it was called Luau. Lutheran Union of Artists. It's now called LAMAJ, those of you practicing home birth. Lutheran Alternative Musicians and Artists for Justice.
Yeah.
Behind all the fun of that group and that fun with that name is one of the most serious things that needs to be done and has barely been touched within our churches so far, and that is, how does our Sunday morning worship become multicultural? Whether or not you have 1% or 99% people of color in your congregation, how do you reflect yourselves as being part of a multicultural church in a multicultural society? How do we begin to get that and screen that through the Green Book and some new books to make multicultural worship the kind of thing that you experience here at Holden? Another artist group here in Washington that participates is the Grunewald Guild. Then there are a lot of just general justice groups, such as Lutherans for Justice and Peace in Kansas City and St. Louis. Elders, we have a new group called Elders for Justice that's been started by some people, Paul and Carola Bowe. Some of you may know them from some of the old days of Native American Concerns in the ALC, are helping to start a group called Elders for Justice, folks who, especially professionals within the church, who when they retire don't want to just simply go fishing the rest of their life, but want to, and maybe for the first time in their life, are able to be involved in some justice concerns they've never been able to be involved before. Holden Village, another group, Justice Network Communications, is working on the issue of, is it time and are we large enough as a church? There's some advantages to bigness. I'm with Pete, is that I worry that maybe having the largest church that we've ever had before makes us in danger of just being even closer to being General Motors at prayer. I don't know. But maybe we're large enough now to support an independent press. Many of you know the National Catholic Reporter. What about a National Lutheran Reporter? And there's a group now hard at work at trying to see whether that could be established. Some of you know the old organization of an independent mission society in the AELC that was called Partners in Mission, that was disbanded at the forming of the new church. There's now come into being a new comparable kind of organization called Christians Linked in Mission. So they're just some, and you could name a lot of justice concerned groups out of your own base that also have to face the same kind of question that Pete has named. How do we begin to get strength in our linking ourselves together with each other, letting our issues feed on each other, and helping us grow with each other, and helping us to relate to carrying out our issues more effectively?
Yeah, good question. You know, serving in a rural community, just in the context of a community of 1,500 people in a congregation about half that size, sometimes we get into some good discussions and sometimes even some frayed feelings there amongst farm people, representing the different power organizations, if you will, that are each striving to elevate agriculture, you know, and its declining role in the United States in terms of the number of people who are directly involved, you know, living on land and producing. And even within that shrinking base, you have the NFO, National Farmers Organization, the Farm Bureau. You have other groups that have jumped up, and you know, we get, just in the context of the congregation, some honest disagreement. Farm Bureau people tend to be Republicans and very much uninvolved, or sometimes very angrily involved against environmentalists. NFO people tend to be an entirely different tack. Farmers Union somewhere in the middle.
Yep.
And in this, you know, just in that alone, you know, maybe 500 people cannot come to an understanding. Their desire and goals are pretty similar, but their means of achievement are so different. that they don't agree with one another. You'll never get a farmers union person showing up at a farm bureau thing because those are Republicans, you know, and vice versa. And I'm just wondering how you're going to hold such a huge network together of people maybe who are involved, let's say, in one aspect of justice, saying, boy, I can't buy the gay concerns, for example. You know, just some discussions in our adult forums, you know, I can sense that transferring what farmers are dealing with, you know, to justice, other justice issues, because that's a justice movement too. But you're
absolutely right. It's part of what makes this whole thing fun.
It's an interesting Sunday morning. It doesn't get a Republican and a Democrat ready to go 2 out of 3 falls.
You're absolutely right. It's part of what makes it a lot of fun for what we're already doing in our fall conference of gathering of delegations from all 30 of these groups and more. We are lifting up the 3 most controversial issues that are represented in JNLC and the ones who have the least amount of support and base within the institutional church, namely gay lesbian concerns, pacifism concerns, and concerns of racial justice. And our goal at that meeting is to have them teach the rest of the delegations more about their issues and to struggle with each other about what they mean to us and about how we do. Not necessarily come aboard and carry each other's agendas in full agreement with each other, but how do we support each other in an interlocking kind of way of a mutual kind of support in finding the commonness in our concerns.
Confrontation as you get in that setting or between political kinds of things.
Yeah.
Confronting all the times that what's common among us.
Yeah, and also learn to fight well. It's the same thing also in the relationship between justice agenda groups such as in JNLC and in the institution. We're in a new kind of relationship between grassroots groups and the institution that we've never been in before. In terms of cooperation and mutual recognition of each other. Last December, just as the new church was about to come into being, JNLC sponsored a day of dialogue between all the new staff in the national offices of the ELCA who have justice in their portfolio and representative of organizations. And they all came and had a wonderful day of dialogue with each other, not with some kind of a sense that we would always be working well together, we will often be in confrontation with each other, but recognizing that there is something of that yin and yang of a relationship to each other and of a recognition on their part in terms of their own self-interest that a lot of the things that need to happen in that those 3 pillars of new concerns and of the old concerns will require a lot of grassroots support because there is going to be a lot of opposition to it within the institution. There are a lot of incredibly good people who have been hired in the new church.
Yeah.
On the national level, that's right. Many of them came out of, recommended out of our groups. And not only on the staff, but on the boards. If you go down the boards of the new church, there are a significant percentage of people on each of those boards who have profound concern for justice being more central to the church. On the synodical level, on the regional level, and there needs to be, the gospel calls us into some very creative struggle, and those people are going to need our help. We will sometimes be in tension with them, and sometimes we will be the force that helps them carry their issues over. Jim?
Yeah, the thing that and I recognize that has happened in the political structure of the church, and there's a concern that I have is that for most of the constituency of the Lutheran Church, most of the liberation movements, be they blacks, women's, what have you, have passed them by. I mean, you realize that. And now we're coming with the issue hot and heavy on the gay issue, the gay and lesbian issue. And of course, having been involved in this very, very deeply in the last 6-7 years, and spending most of my time talking to the converted, all I have to do is come to a place like this and do a lecture Dan Lesbin issues and realize where most of the church is on this, which is, you know, 15 years ago. And pastors asking for materials to introduce to their congregation that has been around for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I'm really concerned about this and what kind of assumptions and presuppositions we're building into the political structure of the church, and the church getting so far out ahead, the institution, so far out ahead of its boards and commissions, that we might be setting ourselves up for a backlash.
That's right.
It is going to be incredible.
There's
which the other denominations have experienced.
That's right. There's
excellent observation.
There really needs to be the kind of training and education and movement that needs to take that very, very seriously.
And which is another get in the congregations.
That's right.
We might, in the next 3-4 years, convert all 65 bishops.
But it's got to be on that congregation.
Got to get into the church.
And it needs to be within that institution that starts carrying out the educational stuff that comes down from within that institution also for the congregations, and not just simply depending upon whether or not there's going to be grassroots movements.
With the pattern has been in the past, and I don't want to keep riding this to death, but the pattern has been in the past to send out written materials and feel that they have done their job because they've got educational materials, films, what have you, so on, like this, produce, and feel that the job has been done. The political work has not been done.
The bell's going to ring in a few moments. I want to say two more things quickly. One is that JNLC will also not only be a network, will be helping to start single-issue coalitions as they are needed. One of them we referred to this afternoon is the Pension Members for Divestment, which is going to be continually working for the divestment of the Lutheran Church from South Africa. We've decided now that we're going to take at least a few moments tomorrow during the first lunch hour. For those of you who want to go to a second lunch hour, there's some people who've requested this before they leave on the bus tomorrow, to talk about the Pension Members for Divestment and its goals. So I left that out deliberately tonight, knowing there would be an opportunity once this week still and another time next week for specifically discussing that campaign for divestment, which has been a concern of many people all this week. That's the first thing. Tomorrow at the first lunch hour, we will do Pension Members for Divestment. For those who want to especially be involved in doing some organizing in your own grassroots around those kinds of issues.